Welcome to the Technology Lab, presented by CPA Practice Advisor, with your hosts, Randy Johnston and Brian Tankersley.
I'm Randy Johnston, along with Brian Tankersley. Brian, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Brian Tankersley. I've been in the profession since the early 90s, have been doing accounting technology since the late 90s on a professional basis. I've written a few hundred product reviews, and I've spoken in 48 states talking about accounting technology to CPAs.
And I am from Hutchinson, Kansas. I am so pleased to spend time with you today. I have been on the top 100 list since 2004, the top 25 list since 2011. I love to spend time in technology and with my family as well. I'm fortunate enough to have founded Network Management Group, which is a managed service provider, providing services from Boston to Honolulu. And my K2 business is how I met Brian, and it is how we've probably met many of you, producing CPE and PD in the US and Canada. We're so pleased to spend time with you on today's Technology Lab. Good day. Welcome to the Technology Lab. I'm Randy Johnston with my co-host, Brian Tankersley. We have very interesting evolving standards, new standards to talk to you about that we discovered at CES this year. Brian and I do go to the show to try to understand what business tools are going to be useful to you this year and off into the future. So, you know, one that we mentioned in our Meeting Tech CES episode was HDMI. So, Brian, this new HDMI 3 is a big breakthrough because we've been living in the world of HDMI 2 for a while. And what type of things should our listeners know about HDMI 3? What do you think is important?
You know, I think it's important for them to know that the standard is changing. And the primary reason it's changing is because of 8K content. The 8K content is starting to come out. And, you know, we've been streaming now 4K content from Netflix for at least a couple of years. And so as 8K content starts to roll out, you're going to need a way of getting that data from whatever it's stored on or how wherever it's coming from to the actual display. So HDMI 3 is that it does 80 gigabits per second. You know, again, it's a really impressive technology feat that they've done. Now, we're still in the infancy. The standard hasn't been fully ratified yet by the IEEE and all of the engineers out there, but people are already building cables against the standard, and they're building integrated circuits against the proposed standard to go forward. And so it looks like it's gonna take off there.
When it comes to HDMI, obviously the current standard's 2.1, and that's been around since 2017. So, you know, we've got 6 years in that standard. And HDMI 2.1 was a big breakthrough because it, you know, got up to 10K supported, and it did digital stream compression and high frame rate and lots of other things. And it became maybe the superset for everything. But one thing that I've concluded since the HDMI standard was released in 2017 is Thunderbolt 4 is probably now the real superset, because you can run HDMI over Thunderbolt. And part of this whole cable issue is just the speed. See, our listeners may not remember, in HDMI 2.0, you could only do 6 gigabit. And in 1.4, you could only do 3.4 gigabits. So this is quite a breakthrough to be able to do 80 gigabits here in HDMI 3. Now, you know, in terms of the two-way nature of the cables and the power support and all that, there's a lot of differences in the cable standards, but there is also the ability to put fiber optics in these cables so you can have an extension on the cables in a pretty significant way. Any more on HDMI, Brian?
No, I think you've pretty much got it. I think it's important for everybody to know this, because not all HDMI cables are created the same. Now, I'm going to warn you here that one of my admonitions about HDMI cables is I never, ever buy HDMI cables at Best Buy, because they're about three times what they cost on Amazon or Monoprice, another one of my favorite places. If you're going to put one of these things in a wall, I would try to make sure you're doing the HDMI 3 spec so that you're good to go for some time.
Yeah, that is great. Well, you know, another specification, another standard that you and I have talked about for some time is Wi-Fi 6E. Now, 6E, the enhanced Wi-Fi 6, is really just now arriving in volume in wireless access points. And we made the strong admonition starting in 2021, don't buy Wi-Fi 6 if you can get 6E. Now, we know that a new standard, Wi-Fi 7, is imminent. But at this point, I'm pretty comfortable saying, look, there is plenty of Wi-Fi 6E equipment in the marketplace. The E, enhanced, gives us extra frequencies. Those extra frequencies can increase the speed notably in our wireless access points. And they also have the encryption standard of WPA3 built into them, which we want as well. Now, the new Wi-Fi 7 standard also has the encryption in it. And so that'll be a nice step forward. We only actually physically saw one unit, as I recall. There might have been two, Brian, but TP-Link was the big brand name pushing that. And the Wi-Fi 7, which is officially known as 802.11be or extremely high throughput or EHT, works across the three frequency bands of 2.4 gigahertz, 5 gigahertz, and 6 gigahertz, just like Wi-Fi 6E runs on those same three frequencies. So now Wi-Fi 7 itself, as you know, promising to be quicker. And in fact, specifically, it's supposed to run at 46 gigabits per second. Well, time out. We said that Wi-Fi 6E would really almost allow us to not recommend cables so much anymore. And I'm all the more convinced that Wi-Fi 7 at 46 gig is doing the same type of thing. Now, the Wi-Fi 7 does add 320 megahertz ultra-wide bandwidth QAM operation. And, that's making it about 4 to 5 times faster than Wi-Fi 6 and 13 times faster than Wi-Fi 5. So I've gone on a bit of a rant on Wi-Fi 7 there, Brian. What else is important to know from a Wi-Fi 7 perspective?
Well, this is a technology where I'm not as adamant about Wi-Fi 7 as I was about Wi-Fi 6E. But you'd need to know that with both of those devices, Wi-Fi 6E and with Wi-Fi 7, you need to know that the adapters and the devices that you get, the access points and the routers and other things like that, are going to be more expensive because they have more radio equipment in them. And so as a result, they will end up being, for some of these devices, I've seen them in the $500-ish range. So I just want you to understand that this is not the $60 Linksys WRT54G that you bought 15 years ago. This is a significant upgrade, but it also is going to have a more significant price. The other thing I would say here is that the Wi-Fi 6E and Wi-Fi 7 both use the same 6 gigahertz spectrum area. And so that's the big change, I think, here that you want to make sure you're on the bus for is the 6 gigahertz spectrum that's in Wi-Fi 6E and Wi-Fi 7. Because if you miss out on that, you're buying something that is functionally obsolete the day you put it in.
Yeah, and I know it's hard when you're listening to us, friends, to understand what's going on, but the 6E uses 40, 80, and 160 megahertz. And with Wi-Fi 6E, it uses 36 channels in 40, 17 channels in 80, and 8 channels in 160. Well, 320 megahertz, there's 3 more channels that are used by Wi-Fi 7. And if you go back to Wi-Fi 6 and 5, they only used 11, 3, and 1 in each of those channels, respectively. So it is a big step up in speed. But there's another technology that I want you to be aware of, and that's the QAM. QAM. See, back in Wi-Fi 4, we only had 64 QAM. In Wi-Fi 5, we had 256. We had 1K in Wi-Fi 6. and there's 4K in Wi-Fi 7. So QAM, quadrature, amplitude, modulation, allows each Wi-Fi signal to be more densely embed data. We get more throughput. That's all that really amounts to. There's also another feature of Wi-Fi 7 called MLO, or multi-link operation. So Wi-Fi 7 devices can simultaneously connect on two separate bands, which gives you aggregated throughput, one wireless access point to another. I suspect this was to help with mesh, but no one explained it to me quite like that. So, you know, Wi-Fi 7, I think, will be a very interesting evolution of standards of wireless. And it's leading us off into a 10 gig future. Now, Brian, you're the one that drugged me back to the booth. And boy, I'm glad you did, because you were the one that said, hey, isn't that that light optic networking, secure military stuff that we read about in the past? And sure enough, we got drugged back in, and it was a company out of France. And basically, we wound up talking to one of the investors. We didn't know it at the time. You might give us just a little bit of background on that stuff, because you were the one that was excited about it. And then I realized, yeah, if Brian wouldn't have drugged me back, I'd have missed it.
So here, a couple of things here. First off, when we talk about Wi-Fi, there is a 10 gig future that's going to take place for our wired internet. And that 10 gig future is a limiting factor on how fast this Wi-Fi can actually go, because you can only go as fast as you can get the data to the device. And so that's one of the reasons why that QAM is so important, because again, you want to be able, in the aggregation, is because in a lot of these mesh systems like the Eero, you're going to end up needing that extra bandwidth if you want to take advantage of the speed. Now, let's run back in here and talk about that other technology, which is called Li-Fi. Now, this is one that's coming. It's Li-Fi, okay? And it, instead of it being the light, instead it goes through light. And so the idea there is that we have a light and it turns itself on and off millions of times a second. And then I have a receiver that looks almost like a solar cell that receives the data. And then it can be sent at extremely high bandwidth over distances. So there's actually the Alstom company is building out the trains for the new subway line in Paris. And they're actually setting it up where the train has cameras on it. And at each train stop, in 20 seconds, it transmits all of the data at about 8 gigabits per second back to the servers using this Li-Fi technology, this light of transmitting it. And the advantage of it is it's a whole lot harder for people to snoop on you. And so it's actually being adopted now in some military locations, and it's making its way into industrial applications. And I think it's going to be in consumer hands, I don't know, 3 years, 5 years, something like that. But it's a very interesting technology, because you basically just have these little can lights up above you, and they're transmitting data, and you don't even realize it's happening.
Yeah. And in fact, I was so impressed, because he said, I think it was the 18 line in Paris. Is that correct? That basically has been fit with this technology. And he said, pull into a station and it's in production today, and we can transfer everything off of all the video cameras in 20 seconds. And, you know, we were doing the math trying to figure out how many gigabytes that was, but it was, a ton of data. And I think it was somewhere between 40 and 80 gigabytes that came off the train in that short period of time.
Yeah, it was a stupid amount of data. And the thing about it is that this may be another way that you can transmit data using these little things that look like lights, and they blink so fast you've never noticed that it wasn't a light. But when they're transmitting, man, they can flat transmit the data.
It's pretty stunning. Now, one thing that I was surprised about, Brian, was the limited amount of 5G coverage. You know, in prior shows, there's been talk about 5G for a long time, but 5G is pretty much here. And I was looking for the next technology, 6G, we'll call it. And there were so few displays talking about it. It was like, I guess they're not expecting to get there anytime soon. But something that's near and dear to your heart this year that you're writing about is some of the home standards. Now, of course, through the years, we've talked about Z-Wave and Zigbee, but there was a new standard introduced called Home Connect, which was done by the major appliance manufacturers. And it looks like the new leading interface mechanism is Matter. Now, we did not mention that in our meeting tech lab, but the Dext, Samsung Dext meeting technology is also supposed to have a Matter connection. So, you know, on these home standards, Brian, you know, as I'm thinking about how we're going to recommend things be connected together, I wish there was one standard rather than three we were talking about. But, you know, what do our listeners need to know about Matter or Home Connect or Z-Wave at this point?
Well, I think the devices are out there. It's still a little too hard for your average user to use this. Most of us that are doing heavy-duty Internet of Things have, in my IoT group on my phone, I have 10 apps. And that's the problem that I think it was Matter is going after. They're actually making an app, or they're making their app, the hardware that complies with the Matter standard is compatible with other apps. So if you had, like right now, I have Fade Electric, that's my thing for lights, and I have Zmodo and Blink and Ring for cameras, and I have Maros for my garage door opener. What if I could have one app instead of having to have those five applications in there available to me? And I could pick the Samsung app, or I could pick whoever's app I wanted to. And that was something that I thought was particularly interesting about that standard and kind of where they're headed. The home standards, though, they just don't seem to be converging at the rate I had hoped they would have. And so, again, it is going to still be hard to do a lot of this automated home stuff. There will still be privacy concerns that you're going to have to deal with, but they are making progress toward this, which made me happy.
Yeah, I agree. It does make me happy as well. And I would like more convergence myself. We are seeing still the preponderance of the Apple, the Google, and the Amazon Alexa mechanisms. But, you know, over the last few years, you know, Alexa this and I this, you know, in the Apple infrastructure, that we didn't see that this year hardly at all. So it is becoming much more serious, much more commercial. But that brings me then, Brian, to maybe close up our session today about some old things that are new again. And, you know, 3D was one of those. The new 3D laptop, I love watching stuff in 3D. And it's nice to have 3D without glasses, which is what one of the new laptops did. And it was, for me, quite good to look at. I know it'll give a lot of people headaches and other things.
And it gave me a headache.
Yeah, just like that. And, you know, it's the same way with VR goggles, how, you know, like our instructor, Steve Yoss, you know, he has enough vertigo. You put glass VR goggles on him and he's gone in just a matter of a few minutes. But one thing that I think was obvious that was coming back were the glasses. You know, I've done Google Glass in the past, and the commercial glasses were coming of age. But the one that I know has been 15 years in the making, and you and I both called it right off the bat, Smell-O-Vision, which, again, the CEO there didn't like it at all. But we did get to talk to Avner Gal, who is from the Iroma Sense company out of Israel. And this technology was interesting because what I'd like you to begin to picture is that you can actually smell things in the context of either education, or they were promoting the idea of retail or a movie. Now, I actually had you go through the interactive, you know, pick a scent, and you did that for us. They also talked about how their goal is to be able to have a cartridge that they can preload in a theater so things can, you know, smell in the context of a movie and be delivered on an individual by individual basis. Now, we think these smell cartridges will be delivered at home finally. And by the way, they've been done in the past. You know, I remember doing this back at least 15 years ago. And frankly, it might have been 25 years ago in the early days of the internet that I had a smell type device. Because one of the problems with shopping online is you can't tell what you're buying from a smell perspective, and it's hard to tell what you're buying from a touch perspective. But I think these guys might have had some interesting ideas on smell. So what would you say about the fragrance shopping, or what else would you want listeners to know about aroma scents?
Well, I think it's a very interesting, especially for our attendees that are in the retail business. I think it's a very interesting thing. Maybe you want to have a certain smell that's associated with your product or with your firm or whatever. Apple for years has actually had scents that they put in the packages so that when you open an Apple box, it engages the sense of smell as well as your other senses. I don't think they've figured out a way yet to tap into taste, but the eyes, the ears, the smell, I think they're engaging with as much as they can.
Yeah. In fact, interesting that you bring up Apple, because with my iPhone 14 and iPad Pro 12.9 units, I very specifically tried to make sure I was aware of the scent inside the box. And even though, I don't have a great sense of smell, I thought it was very fascinating how they were still doing that with those products.
Yeah, and I wonder what the psychology and the research is behind it, but we'll have to do that in the future. But it is believed by some folks that having the smell right is a key component of that first impression, which I found fascinating.
Well, our goal here was try to get you thinking about new standards, specifically about HDMI 3, about Wi-Fi 7, how 10 gig was evolving, and how home standards of Matter and Home Connect and Z-Wave were coming along. And we believe that many of those technologies will be used in your home as well as your business. We look forward to having you join us again in a future Technology Lab.
Thank you for sharing your time with us. We'll be back next week with a new edition of the Technology Lab, brought to you by CPA Practice Advisor.